This is Justice Matters with Tim Buxton, coming to you from Yugambeh country of the Kommonberry people of the Gold Coast, Australia. I'm your host, Tim, where my sole aim is to share conversations I get to have with inspiring people doing remarkable work to create a world where we all belong. This podcast is brought to you by the Just Travel Company. Experience wonder and unearth justice and discover the just way to travel today. Visit just-travel.co. Without further ado, here's our guest for this episode of Justice Matters. Hey there, Kyra. Welcome to the Justice Matters podcast. It's sunny day in Tel Aviv, which is surprising. Is that right?
It is. It's December 2nd and it's sunny as if it was a summer day here.
So good. Well, it's been a little while waiting to get on this podcast with you just so thankful for not only the work you do, which I can't wait to get into. You work with prostitutes, and I think that always comes out a little bit too funny. A little too interesting when people ask what you do. But maybe you could give us a bit of a intro as to what that means, and a bit about what is that you're up to at the minute.
So I work at a day center for women who are homeless, living on the streets. Actively engage in street-based prostitution or brothels, but mostly street-based prostitution. And I would say about 99% of them are addicted to heavy drugs. So crystal meth, fentanyl, heroin, coke, all the lovely street drugs. And we just have a day center for them that they can come in and out throughout the day. It's kind of, the concept is just a home for them on the streets. They can shower, they can change their clothes. Every time they come, they get clean underwears and socks. They have food, they have beds. It's just everything that we could think of that they would need at that very moment for the few hours that we're open every day, that they would be able to just come and receive. And obviously that's the humanitarian side. We are a faith-based organization, so we also offer spiritual assistance or whatever they would like. Some women come in and they say, the first thing they ask is, like, can I have prayer? And so we offer both sides of those things. And then we also do street outreaches. So we've learned, especially during COVID, that there's a whole group of women that only work in the brothels that are on the street. So we figured out that during COVID, when we would go out, the women couldn't come to our centers, so we'd go out to them. And then we started walking by these rooms and by these brothels, and then we realized, wow, there's this whole group of women that don't come to us. So we started doing outreaches at night and going to visit these women. And even though we're open again, very few of them will come to our center because they can't really leave their rooms, or they're usually their working hours. So we go to them as well. So that's, in a nutshell, what we do, what I do with the organization I work with.
I remember visiting you, gosh, earlier this year. Can't believe was it in July? The end of July.
I just remember it being extremely hot day.
Yeah. And there we were. I mean, I had, not only did I, but the team, the board and friends of mine that were on our trip of my organization got to spend some time with you, the founder of the organization. Yeah. You're the assistant director. It's been going for 18 years in literally right in the X marks the spot of, it was funny. As we were pulling up to drive, we to find a place to park, you thought, we get out the parking lot and there's condoms, there's like some syringe stuff on the ground, and my team just, and I hadn't really fully explained to them what we were doing. I said, we're visiting the red carpet. They're this great, you know, I love the name red carpet because you really do roll out the red carpet for the people that most people disregard and don't want to even spend any time with. And they're like, Tim, where are we? What are we doing? Is our stuff safe in the car? Should we be here? Again,
it didn't kind of dawn on to me because I kind of just assumed I know where we're going. I mean, Israel is a phenomenal country. Tel Aviv is got just so many of the most beautiful, you know, beachfront, you know, places to hang out, and everyone's out there doing their workouts, and it's, yeah, it's just obviously remarkable. And here we are, where no one really wants to go, unless you're interested
in drugs or prostitution,
that, the dark side of life, you could say. And so much joy on the faces. And as we were kind of standing outside the center, we got a sneak peek in, but it really wasn't appropriate for obviously folks like me, blokes, to be to be going in and spending extended time. But as we were standing outside and the women were walking in and out, you could just tell they all just looked at you and were like, you were like their long lost friend that they seen. They loved seeing you. It was a safe haven. It was a place I could only imagine for the dark places they get taken to in a day, and some, you know, not even with a safe place to sleep at night, to know that that place exists, even though we wish and hope it didn't, was just beautiful. So to try and paint the picture of it, I don't know that I've really done it justice, but you know, you've been working in that space for a long time. What kind of drew you into wanting to do to work with the red carpet and in this line of work? Because like when we get into your background and your experience and even your studies that you're doing right now, like you are deep in a space of compassionate work that is most people don't get quite so involved in. So what brought you into it? Where did it all begin for you?
Wow, it's been a long journey. I didn't know exactly where I was gonna end up, and I don't think this is the end goal, but I always knew that at some age, I think it was like maybe 13 or 14, I kind of just always had this like really strong conviction, or I don't know how to explain it exactly, but I always knew I was going to be involved somehow in helping women. We grew up as a family traveling back and forth between Turkey and Israel. My dad was very involved with the Kurds and just the Muslim world in the Middle East, connecting them with the heart for Israel and God's heart for them as well as part of the church. So I think we were always exposed to so many different areas in life. And one of them was, for me, I got to see firsthand women and in the Muslim world, some Muslim worlds and some areas where women were below men. And I always knew it wasn't right. And I always had this inside feeling of like, I want to do something about it. And I think as a child, I was like, well, I'm going to be the next president of Turkey and I'm going to change all the laws. Like that's a very...
We wish you could be the next president of Turkey.
That was the only solution I had as a 13-year-old. I was like, oh, I'm gonna change the laws. That seems right. And it always stuck with me over the years. I think, first of all, as a woman, we can always, in some form, everyone has their own story, but we've all, in some form, had a lot of injustice done to us. Sadly, it's just the reality of the world we live in. It's more extreme for others and all that stuff. But as a woman, I think I was always aware of a lot of injustice around that. Israel is a very safe place, but it still exists here as well. So I always kind of stayed involved somehow with women's rights or some sort of staying active with helping organizations stand up for justice that work with assisting women out of prostitution or violence. And I just kind of stayed on the outside, but I just stayed involved. So I was in school, then I went into the army. All these realms that you know, kind of, I couldn't jump into this field right away, but I stayed involved. And I just kind of knew. So it's just one thing led to another. And I think I stayed kind of faithful to that little dream I had or desire or conviction inside me that I needed to, I couldn't let this go. I couldn't turn away from it. I couldn't be involved in something else without somehow doing something about this. So it kind of stayed with me, and just one door led to another door being opened to another door. And it started with, in the army, I got to be a commander. I thought I was just going to be in charge of a group of girls that are after basic training. They get to do their job and then they move on. Yeah. And in the Army, they do this selection, kind of the split between girls that are normal and average and have high IQ and come from relatively stable backgrounds. And then you have groups of also boys. They don't want to do this with girls, boys and girls. They come from like lower socioeconomic backgrounds. Maybe they have a criminal record, but they want to integrate them into the military because it's such a central part of being a citizen here. So they will put them through through easier courses. So I got, without me knowing, I got put in charge of a group of these girls. And it was like first time with like being involved with helping. And I didn't plan it. I didn't know, but it just kind of rolled into that. So I had a few groups of girls there. And then after the Army, I joined a nonprofit in Jerusalem called the Jerusalem Institute of Justice. Help them out with some projects, one of them being helping them translate the movie Nefarious, which opened my eyes to the movie Nefarious. Have you ever seen that one from Exodus Cry?
Nefarious.
Yeah.
I haven't.
It came out, I want to say maybe 2010, maybe 12, somewhere around that time, but it was about human trafficking. And Israel was still involved with human trafficking, and it didn't have a lot of great laws in place yet. But it came out, so I got to be helping that project. And it just one thing led to another, and I just stayed in it. And then 6 years ago,
Okay, we'll get to the red carpet in a second because you've touched on some things. One, when I was in the Army, I mean, it's not unusual for women to be in the Army, but obviously living in Israel, it's a, I know here in Australia, the US, other places, the idea of, you know, you have to spend, I think, is it 1 or 2 years service in the military?
Yeah. Women usually do two, men 2 years. Do three, and so, but I think they changed it recently.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, for obvious reasons, Israel is in the news, and that part of the world is in the news quite a lot. There's been, since its inception as a modern state, there's been several wars and conflicts, and that's a whole nother discussion altogether. You know, those experiences, being in institutions that are highly male dominant, but it doesn't surprise me that they saw something in you. One, if people knew the family and the heritage you came from, which you kind of touched on, I mean, your parents, I mean, I'm really good friends with your brother. Your parents, I met you and your parents in Iraq when we were living there those years ago. Who would have thought our paths would have crossed,
That was a wild trip.
You know, that was a wild trip, right? And I only got like one day of your wild trip that you were on, obviously because I was living there and you were just kind of passing through in the mountains of northern Iraq on the border with Iran and Turkey. And,
as one just
and there we were
does.
In this living room. As one just casually does. But that is what one does casually do in the Niebuhr family.
Exactly,
right? And so I think it's not, you know, for you, that's all you knew was if you're going to do something, you do it. Like, the options are there. Why wouldn't you go to, I mean, the places that you grew up, the heritage that you have, your mum is, correct me if I'm wrong, Armenian Turkish, right? Is that correct?
Yep.
I don't even know how to explain how that all, you know.
She's Armenian.
Turkish, Armenian Turkish.
I would say Armenian Turkish. She's an Armenian from Turkey. So you have Armenians in Iran, and you have them in Armenia, you have them in Russia. So she's an Armenian that grew up and born and raised in Turkey, but fully Armenian.
Kurdish in Iraq. Kurdish in Iran. Honestly, this is something, okay, again, this might be even education, maybe not for everybody, but for so many people, it's something when I realized when I was in Israel earlier this year, not for the first time, but it was so pronounced as we were talking with our Arab Israeli friends in Nazareth that identified them as Palestinian Israeli, or and it's that confluence of identity, and we're kind of veering off a little bit, but that identity you grew up with was an identity that was just so full of the nations and so full of different countries in the Middle East and that melting pot. I mean, what did it feel like growing up in that family? I mean, you really do have wonderful, wonderful parents who've left a legacy and an imprint in your life. Can you give us a little bit of a sneak peek into what life was like even going further back? And then we'll hit straight up into more about the red carpet and some of your other incredible things that you're involved in.
What was it like growing up? I mean, for me, it was very normal growing up in a family that as it was. We had, I don't know even how to describe it, but we moved a lot around the country, around the Middle East. My dad was always back and forth between Turkey, you know, northern Iraq. Even when everything was going down with Saddam in like the 80s and 90s, he was still traveling back and forth. He has wild stories. If you ever catch him, just ask him about that time of life. It's pretty wild. But we always grew up, I feel like I always grew up knowing that, like,
and you can't catch him, right? Go to Israel. He'll take you, he'll be the best person to take you around and could tell your stories. I can assure you that. And I'll be making sure I do ask him more about his crazy Iraq travel. Yeah.
But, I think it was always just very normal. Like this, like, concept of, like, you have a life that, you know, it is your life, but you also, like, in your life, there's people around you and community and being involved and being active and taking stands. Like, those were always elements, I feel like, in our home that were always very active. And even one year, my parents decided to take a sabbatical from their usual ministry life and go move our whole family to East Turkey. So when I was about around that time of 12, 13, we moved out to East Turkey, out close to the border of Syria, Gaziantep. And we lived there for a year, us and there was, I think, two other foreign families, but it was just a big Turkish city. And we lived there and I loved that year. And then we went back a few more times as a family. And anytime my parents traveled on any one of the trips to the Middle East, we would join Egypt, you know, Cyprus, Turkey, Jordan. We were always involved in those things. So it was very, I mean, it seems unique, but it also seems very normal to me to just to be. And our home was always open. We had people coming through that wanted to know about the Middle East and know about what's going on. And we got to meet amazing people and hear about other people's work. And somehow it just created this massive network that we were just automatically a part of, because it kind of got created as we grew up. And now, like you said, the legacy, like, us kids, we get to walk in it. We get to meet wild. Like, anytime I'm traveling in the Middle East, I'm like, Mom, Dad, who do you know in Kurdistan? Who do you know in, you know, East Turkey? Yeah. All these things. And so it's unique. It definitely is unique, but it's a gift that we received as children, being born into that family.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I can say the same for myself in the way my parents raised us and there's something so beautiful when you step into the presence of, I found that with you, with your brother, Yosef, and I haven't met your other sister or brother yet, but I hope to soon. I almost met your brother when I was there last time. He was busy out filming in the middle of the desert, shooting on a set, and so we didn't quite get to cross paths. But when you're in the presence of the neighbors, there's this warmth and this openness, and there's this, you know. And I think that, to bring it back to your current work with the red carpet, that there is something to be said for even in the midst of justice work, right? Activism, standing up for your rights. Mm-hmm. There's something to be said for still creating a safe place for people to be. And having an open, not a cynical spirit or a cynical or antagonistic mindset. You can still fight for justice and still being extremely generous, open, compassionate. Yeah. They're not at two odds. What I mean, as I say that, like, because that's kind of my experience of just being in and around you and your work. How does that resonate with you? What would you say is the secret to being able to do that? Like, to stay in that place of witnessing such atrocities, understanding, hey, this is just not right. But also, you know, remaining so, compassionate and loving and soft in such a hard space.
You know, I think it comes in waves. There are, to be honest, like, it's a very hard job. It's a very hard reality that I witness and that I'm a part of, and these women share with me. It's beautiful and it's loving, but there also are seasons that it is very hard. I think for me over the years, something that has helped was just keep moving with it. Find people around you that also have the same dream and vision that you can share, the beauty of your work, but also the hardship of your work, that you can cry, a lot of crying. I think you can't do this job without admitting that it's just, it's horrible. The reality is horrible. The life they have to live is horrible. Mm. What we have to witness is horrible. You just have to acknowledge it. I don't know. That's something I've kind of been learning over the years. You just gotta let everything come up, all the emotions and everything, and just process it and move with people. But I think just being with people that are like-minded and serving with other people that have been there. So like the lady that I work for that started the red carpet, she's been there for 20 years. So sharing with her and learning from her and her experience, and journeying together with a good team, I think makes a difference.
I love the analogy you put of it, comes in waves, and that picture of it isn't an algorithm or a steady kind of answer to how to deal with the complexities of the work that you're in.
I think I lost you for a second there. Can you repeat the question?
Oh, okay. I love the way you explained it as being like waves, because it's not this is the answer to how you fix this or how you remain in this state. It's not an algorithm. There is this sense of it being this constantly moving, an ocean of experience, and being allowing to kind of, I was out, had my four kids with me today. They're off school and had a meeting with somebody. And so we went down to the beach while the kids could play on the playground, and was chatting, and the waves absolutely massive today, like literally huge. They're towing surfers in on jet skis. It feels like you're in Hawaii. But like literally 2 days ago, it was like a lake. And I just, you know, as you're talking about, you having to find a safe place where you can let whatever emotion or whatever experiences or whatever the weather brought today, you know, someone came in a situation that you kind of have no control over, be and do. And it kind of leads into some of the study that you're doing, which is like your bachelor was in criminology and psychology, like a forensic. I mean, I don't know. The more we kind of get into who is Kyra, it's like I would not I could just imagine you at a bar, you know, like I wouldn't want to, like, you know, who's this secret assassin spy that could totally comes across all nice and kind, but could be a lit. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. But you know, you've got that background in that, but now you're doing your master's thesis in how to, well, you should explain. What are you doing your master's thesis?
My program is, it's forensic psychology or clinical criminology. Every area calls it something else, but it's the whole realm of mental health meets crime crossover. So So that's my studies. A lot of my classes are around mental health treatment, treatment for different kind of offenders, mainly sexual offenders and violent offenders. But it's all around that whole realm and assessments, risk assessments. But they also gave us a lot of free range on what we would want to do our thesis on. So I chose to do my thesis on compassion fatigue and secondary trauma among volunteers working with women engaging in street prostitution. So basically, I'm researching myself and my team. But yeah, it's just
right.
There's no way that it doesn't. There's no way, like, research shows, and there's so many articles about this, but there is no doubt that exposure to other person's trauma and repetitive exposure and prolonged exposure will affect you. There is no doubt, unless you don't have an emotion or don't care. And especially if you're more engaged with your clients, which I love the women that I serve. My team love these women that they serve. And just like watching someone you love in pain, it's the same with the women we serve. We love these women, and watching them go in and out, come and leave our center, jump in a car with a client, come back. You know, it's a painful experience. Or listening to them share about their night and what happened to them while they were asleep at the park, or what client did to them. You listen with compassion, and you listen as you can. We always tell our volunteers and our team, like, don't push yourself. These are very intense situations. When you need a break, you take a break. But still, you love these women. So there's no way, even if you put up all the security and all the right things, and you do all the courses, and you have a therapist of your own, it's going to affect you. But what you can do is, you know, it affects you, great. But then what is the outcome of that? You know, it could be a negative outcome, and it could be a positive outcome. Even if it is negative, there's levels. So it's just, it's working in that whole field of just seeing, it's fascinating to me to just study that and learn that for myself as well, but also for my team, and hopefully people that are choosing to step into these very intense areas, especially when it comes to fighting for justice. Because if you're fighting for justice, there's probably a lot of injustice happening that is horrible. Pick your realm, you know, refugees. I chose to work with women, but there's children, there's inmates, there's everything. So it's just, how do you kind of prepare? I don't think you can ever really be prepared, but how can you prepare, and how can you brace yourself for the waves that will come?
And I liked how you shared about surrounding yourself with good people outside of that. Like, you're obviously throwing yourself into some really hard situations, but it's so important, therefore, to who you surround yourself with. And I can imagine, you know, having someone that just is willing to listen to you to talk, because a lot of people don't get it. They've got their families, and it's not because people aren't compassionate, but they've got busy lives, and things are, you know, they're dealing with stuff that, you know, their business might be falling apart, or their kids, their own kids might be struggling, or you know, you know,
but I also don't think you also don't want to share with someone the stuff, because it's not for everybody. The field I chose isn't for everybody. There are other fields that are not for me. So it's finding the right people. I had a friend who worked with me at the red carpet for a season. We were also roommates. And we realized, both of us realized, that the drive home from work, where we would laugh and we would cry about certain stories and certain situations, or this happened, or one time, you know, sadly, it's a very rare, but one time she got attacked by one of the women and I was involved, and we had this situation, and a pimp jumped in to like help us. It was a very odd situation, but we processed it together. We talked about it. And then a year later, that same woman came in, and I think I was tweezing her chin hair. It was a very funny situation, but we both sat there and we looked across the room and we're like, how crazy that we got to experience this, and that we can process this together. The fact that 1 year she's beating us up, the next time she's sitting there saying, thank you for tweezing my chin hair.
Oh,
like, and to have someone that's in the same field that you can really understand the depth of that if there's like, and that really does help having someone that you can just, I can look across the room and say, we know, and we can talk about it. We can laugh about it. We can cry about it. So I would say surrounding yourself also with people, like-minded people, is helpful because you can be fully honest about everything.
This episode is brought to you by The Just Travel Company, your socially responsible travel concierge. Just Travel is the best kept secret in culturally immersive and justice-oriented adventures. Allow Just Travel to take the hassle out of your next trip and experience wonder and unearth justice. Discover the just way to travel today. Simply head on over to just-travel.co to learn more and book your next adventure. Like our flagship Israel Istanbul trip launching out in mid-July 2023.
It's almost like that person you meet, and this is for anybody out there, that suddenly they've lived in the same town you grew up in, and suddenly it's like, you get it. I can actually now finally talk about, and it's like there isn't something that, it's not for everybody. I can't imagine the things that you would see in one day, let alone a year or so of work. And so right, it's really good advice. I feel like with all that you've learned and experienced and all that you're studying right now, there's probably some really cool takeaways for some people that are listening that have a heart, because I know people really do want to delve in to it's such a confronting justice. We see all the movies. You talked about Nefarious, but then we see Hollywood films like Taken, and we see, I could imagine, but it's such a push though for, ending modern slavery and what for those that are like either, really want to make a difference in that, may or may not be, called or feel like they need to go on the coal face of what that work is like, say working in a center like yours. But sometimes I think we can go into it with this, like, I'm going to stop this altogether and this is what we need to do. Like there's a complexity and a layeredness to, what have you learned over the years as you've kind of, being engaged with this work, and there, again, there's no right or wrong way to how to, there's different people that are like trying to change laws and activists, and then there's other people that are more compassionate. But what have you learned over the years of like how to really engage this space and in order to really have effective change take place?
Wow. Let me think about that for a second. I think being present, I think, was one thing that I learned. Being present with everyone that comes in and not focus on like, okay, I'm going to meet this woman. We're going to have this like great conversation. And I don't know. And I talk about this with volunteers that come to us for the first time, but I was like, and we're going to have a conversation and then she's going to go to rehab and then she's going to pick up her life and she's going to move on. It's going to be great. It's going to happen. And it doesn't happen that fast. It happens, and that's great, and that's encouraging. But I thought, it's going to happen a lot faster. I think when I first got involved, I was like, oh, people are just going to, you're going to offer them a chance to get out, and they're going to go. They're going to take it. It takes time, I think. And so being present with the women that I serve, and if you serve with other people that are caught in these kind of lifestyles, just being present with where they are right now, and it just be ready to be on this journey that might be a lifetime marathon with them. Other ones, it really is surprising, but they're in and out real fast. But other ones, I think you prepare yourself that it's going to take time. And because of that, just learn to be very present now with them and where they are at the moment and loving them where they are. I remember for me, that was huge because we went once on a staff retreat with our team. And at the time we had three women that were there for about 15 years serving the women. And then there was three of us who were there for about a year or two, relatively new in the field. And we came up, I don't remember exactly how, but it came up that us younger women were upset, were kind of like frustrated that we weren't seeing results. We weren't seeing change. We weren't seeing the amount of women living with lifestyles as much as we thought it was. And we all found that it was very hard, challenging for us to come and not see that. And then having this group of older women that have been there for over 15 years. And they said, you know, understanding that our purpose right here is just to love every woman that walks through the door and just focus on loving her and serving her right where she's at. That is our purpose. You know, after that, yes, the rehab, the getting out, it's a huge plus, but our job is to just be present. And I think when they told us that, it made sense. And then I started coming with a whole different view of just coming in to serve. And I realized I was a lot more present with the women and just ready to hear where they're at. So, I don't know if everything, but for me, I found that
you
to
know,
be helpful.
No. Well, one, it acknowledges that you don't have the power to control or change somebody's life or make decisions for them, right?
You can be their biggest cheerleader. And I always tell them that. I always say, if you make a choice, you have a team of women here that are going to back you.
Yeah.
And none of us are going to make that choice for you.
Most people just, that's actually what they need to change, though. They don't need someone doing it for them. They don't need someone making up their decisions. They probably live most of their life people telling them what to do all the time in terrible ways, as well as, you know, all kinds of circumstances. And that one bit of autonomy or freedom they might have or feel that they need to take that choice away from them isn't always the answer either. But to instead of being there, giving them, telling someone what to do, loving them and being there with them is probably the most supportive, empowering thing that you can do. It reminds me of this, you know, everyone says, you know, you need to know your why. You have to know your why. And I think a lot of people confuse their why and they conflate that with an agenda. And there's a subtle difference between why I'm doing this and having a manipulated agenda or a end goal that I need to make sure I want to see happen. In other words, I need to know, I need to determine how it's going to end. And again, we can't control that, but we know why we're doing this. Yeah. We know with the passion that drives us and to love without an agenda, to do what you do because you're driven with that passion and why is I think for me it sounds at the heart of what you're saying there. And it can be subtle though, right? It can be a subtle shift that suddenly you're like, the frustration sets in when you're not seeing the results that you feel you need or want to see. How do you deal with in that sense, you know, kind of working in an industry that doesn't seem to be changing that much, or have you seen what's been some of the changes you've seen over the years that you've been involved with this, and where do you see what would you say are some of the things that could be you know, transitions? You talked about the government not really having many laws or in place around it. Like where are things moving? What's been your observations of how the change in the space has been?
There has been change as far as law. So around the time I don't know if how far back people know, but when there was a rise, I think in the 2000s, close to 2010, there was this rise in human awareness for human trafficking more than ever before. And during that time, they made a world list of what countries are the worst and what countries are doing the most to fight human trafficking. And Israel was down on the bottom. With not doing a lot,
no way.
Because we had our border with Sinai open and it was so easy to traffic. Israel was a trafficking hub. Tel Aviv was a trafficking hub. Tel Aviv is changing, but it used to be a very central area I don't know if you've heard of the term sex tourism, that you go to different destinations based on like the brothels and the sex industry that there are. So Tel Aviv used to be a very central place as well. You had a lot of trafficking going on because you didn't have a lot of regulations and law. And with the Sinai border being open, it was very easy to traffic women through here. I don't remember exactly what year. I think it was maybe 2008 or 2010. The laws changed. Israel, once they realized they're on that list and they're pretty down low, they made a lot of change. They worked really hard on this and they changed a lot of laws. And it really didn't make an impact. And the trafficking slowed down a lot. I don't believe it disappeared, but at least it's not what it was before. And I think I think it's shifted up to Turkey, to Istanbul. I'm not sure exactly where are the central hubs right now in Europe, but that changed a lot in Israel when they changed the laws. And then recently they changed in 2018, the law passed, and then in about 2018 or 2020, somewhere they started implementing the Nordic law, which decriminalizes the women and criminalizes the buyer. So it is now illegal. It was never illegal to consume or be a prostitute or to consume prostitution. But now it is. Now it's illegal to consume any services of a prostitute or of prostitution or anything around the sex industry, which I'm fact check me on this. I don't remember. There was debate on it. But whether or not even strippers are, you can't go to, you can't buy a stripper or her services. So that shifted a lot and they started putting that law up. I think it's moving a little slow. It'd be interesting to see in the next year or two, kind of what are the first initial, results from this new law. But I can say from the streets, at least where I'm working. So I work, like I said, with street prostitutes, women that are street based or brothels, which makes up about, I think maybe 13 to 15% of the prostitution in Israel. The rest are like call girls, high end girls. The different realms of prostitution and sex work. But the ones that, where I work, which is more on the streets, the women have been saying that they have less clients. A guy will walk into the brothel and he'll get a fine right away. There's cops around. So it's changing. It's shifting. It's interesting listening to the women who are very used to this being their income. It's changing for them as well. It's affecting them. These women are in this situation because of financial difficulties. And then now in a way their occupation is being taken away. So it is changing. There's a shifting, but I personally believe it's a good change.
You can't just take something away without offering an alternative almost. It's
100%. Yeah. And I think they're working at it. That's the part of change. It's not going to be an easy change. It's going to be a hard change, but I think in the whole picture, in the big picture, I think it is a good step to saying, hey, as a country, as a society, we don't stand with this. We don't agree that using a woman for taking advantage of her situation for your own satisfaction is right. And let's be honest, prostitution is never as nice and beautiful as you want it to be, as it is in Hollywood and movies. And no matter how much you romanticize it, it's a horrible, violent, degrading, dehumanizing industry. And so I think as a society, this law will in the future help make that stand that says, no, it's not okay. This is not something we're going to stand. We're not going to give it as an option for women that don't have options in life. And this seems like an only option. Why is it even an option? It shouldn't be an option. Let's work and change so that when a woman feels like she has no other way to make an income, there is another way, and it's not prostitution. It's not selling your body. It's not laying down to be abused by society and by anybody in society. No matter how much money you have, or no matter how broken you are, it doesn't matter. It doesn't give a right for this. And I think we can change that. I think these laws can shift that. I think in the future, right now, it's painful. And I go sit with these women in the brothels, and it's so hard to listen to them because they don't have an option. They don't have another income. The everything moves slow. I'm not blaming anybody. It's nobody's fault. The government is doing what they can. The social services are doing what they can. Mm. But when you sit with these women right here, right now, it's painful. And all I can do is say, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. This is your reality. Or I don't say anything. I just listen. I listen to them tell me how hard it is for them, that they don't have clients, which means they don't have money for their kids or grandkids. But I believe it's a good change. Right. And it's so hard. It's a complex, it's such a complex issue to hold and to witness the change. But I think in the big, I want to believe that with this change, more change will come, more more people will step in, more organizations, more support for women, more social services for these women, better social services, and for younger girls that are in such horrible situations that they really truly believe that this is the only option they have to make money and a living and to get by, and this is their worth. Sorry, I went on a rant on there.
You know, now I know why you were awarded the Freedom Foundation Award in 2017, you know, for someone who's dedicated and shown and proven against human trafficking in Israel. I mean, that must have been an achievement. And it kind of came out in your passion, and you should never apologize for that. Honestly, it needs to be. I hope everyone that's listening, and I know I'm listening to it thinking, yes, like it's a rallying cry. We can do something. Mm-hmm. Something must be done. I love that there are organizations that you're friends with, that you've even volunteered with, that provide jobs for, you know, thinking of Kite Pride, that provide jobs and income.
We need more of that.
And stuff. Training. It's an economic thing that you've kind of highlighted. There needs to be more economic empowerment and solutions, and again, gender inequality is at the heart of that. You know, when who has the money and the power and the earning income, and that force women, vulnerable minorities, and others into situations that are otherwise excluded because they don't have the equal opportunity at the end of the day. And for me, obviously, with such a passion for serving the displaced and refugee migrant community, it was eye-opening when I was with you to see so many of those that were using, obviously, and in the sex industry were from refugee and migrant backgrounds as well, which meant there's two sides of the coin. There's serving the women, but there's also educating and reforming the way women are viewed, which it must be done by reaching out and having people wanting to engage the men or those that are the abusers in the situation. You know, like you've highlighted, it's a holistic thing. It's a government, it's laws, it's social services. One of the things that I do really feel like has been untapped, and we kind of just mentioned there, is that it's also an economic and a commercial business solution as well. Because at the end of the day, money drives so much of what we do. And yeah, I mean, I just went on a rant there. But yeah, I mean, it's like, it's not like we're going to solve it on this podcast, but I think
I don't know if I'll solve it even in my lifetime. I think these are huge issues, but I think seeing movement in them is encouraging. Seeing the law, it's one small law, but it's going to shift something, and organizations like Kite Pride popping up, or what we do, or there's another one that just started a home for women, like all these things. It starts moving the wheels of change. It's something. It's some sort of sign. I call these small things like sign of life. It's like a sign of life that there's something happening here. It's like a little like
there's
movement. There's breath.
Which you have to hang on to. Yes, hope.
It's sometimes I always feel like God. I always ask for, like, in life, I'm like, I just need a sign of life in this area. I need to know that this is still. There's something here. It's still alive.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like that with even my organization and the work that we do. There's some days you just like, am I making any headway? Like, it seems like things are falling apart, or we're taking one step forward and then three steps back. But it is that one little, like yesterday I get this opportunity as often as I can to sit in the home of a family that has just settled here in Australia, that have moved. They were from Iraq, and you spend time in their presence, and you're just like, oh, this is why. Again, it comes back to, this is why I'm doing it. And I do see signs of hope that there can be change. And I just hope that those that are listening are like inspired by you, Akira, to not think it can't be done, that you there's ways you can do that through getting educated and learning and really understanding the space. There's ways you can do it just by volunteering and serving. There's but you've kind of alluded to it. You don't know that this is where it's ending. And I was curious when you said that. What do you mean? Where do you, like, what is on the horizon for you? Like, you're going to be finished with your studies in a year, and I'm assuming mm-hmm. there's no way that the red carpet will want to lose you anytime soon in the work that you do. Yeah. But it's clear and obvious that you're destined for bigger and greater and more wonderful dreams that are deep in your heart. Can you like share some of those things? Can you give us a hint of where you think that might be?
Well, I think just with finishing school, I think in itself is a dream at the moment. Whoever has done any sort of,
you've got this,
you know, education, it's its own challenge. So just finishing that is a dream that will come. I'm staying positive about that one. And then right now, I don't know. I think, I love what I do with the red carpet, and I want to advance that. And I just want to stay open to dreams. I've always had a desire at some point in life to open kind of like a retirement home for women coming out of prostitution. A lot of women leave prostitution. They don't have pensions or families, or not everyone can always go support back networks. To work. Yeah, so having a retirement home. A farm or something like that. It's so women can come and just heal at any point on their journey. If they want to retire there, they can. And if they want to keep, you know, moving on in life, then move on. But I would love to have something kind of like that. It's kind of a mishmash between what I do with my work now, what I did in the past. I did a little bit of time on a farm that did more inner healing. And I saw the beauty in just being an open space and having a home. This farm woman could come and just be, they didn't have to pay to be there. It was just based on open space, and it was very community based. It was a very beautiful model that I'd like to try and implement in some form. With school,
is it kind of similar to like a kibbutz? Is it kind of like the kind of Israeli kibbutz kind of model, or is that kind of, am I like kinda way off center there?
I think it's kibbutz is a much bigger community. I don't think I'd go that big. But I think I'd just like to have, more of a home at some point. I don't know when yet. I was to say, because it was school right now, I've been exposed to the whole prison system right now. I've been working in the prison system here in the psych wards and doing assessments. And so they don't do a lot with women. Most of the work in the psych wards are only with men. And there isn't, I've been talking with a lot of the people there and just being like, hey, what are they doing for women? And they just said, you know, It's not the focus. And so I've been talking with some people and maybe doing some work, kind of risk assessments for women and psych assessments for women in the prison system. So I would like to stay open. I've always been a curious person, an adventurous person, and I'd like to keep that for the rest of my life. But my work with the red carpet is a very central part of me and my story and my job. I you can ask any woman who's ever been there that came to serve or work there. And we all have this thing of like, it's this weird place that in the darkest, dirtiest, heaviest place, we all come there. And like you said, it's not just me, it's my team. We all, and the women that come through, we all just, this like this very strong presence of joy. And it's not like laughter, but it's like this settling peace. Like we all love coming there no matter what's happening in our life. We've all have our own sets of challenges. Everyone on our team, you know, has their personal life, and everyone in life has challenges. Sure. But we all come there to get refreshed. We all come there when we love coming there. And it's a weird space in that way. It's, you wouldn't expect it to be a place of refreshment, but for a lot of our team members, it's really a place of refreshment because I think we get to give love. And when you give love, you also receive love. And
it's a beautiful exchange, right? It's a beautiful, one of the cool things is one of the things I love giving people is that opportunity to experience. I've had the privilege of experiencing and seeing your work, of being in many places and countries and lived in many parts of the world. I love to take people on that adventure and that journey yeah. with me, because when you experience and you encounter that, you can bring that back home and you can realize I can create that here in my neighborhood, yeah. in my street, wherever, whatever I'm called to. Because like, yeah, it's so simple. But the cool thing is we're building trips out to Israel to visit. We've got a couple of trips in your summer, which is our winter in June, where we've got groups coming through, and we're gonna make sure we add the red yes. carpet on a stop of just, hey, please, we're gonna do. Come, we're gonna hang out with you guys. One, not because we're coming to do anything super special, but to literally witness and see and be inspired, not only by you and the workers that are there, but by these beautiful, beautiful souls that walk in, that yeah. When you encounter them, when you actually get the opportunity to be in their presence and you see that they're survivors, that they're yeah. What I like to call, when I refer to the displaced and refugee community, they're waymakers, right? They're somehow yeah. staying in the fight. This is the beautiful yeah. thing of exciting thing of being able to expose people and take people on that journey. So I'm excited and you know, we've just joined a board of another organization, mm-hmm. a mutual friend of ours, Bob. Yes. Bob Goff. So there's some exciting things that are going to be happening in the future, and yes. and ways in which just simple love and action in wherever, mm-hmm. whatever, you know, wherever part of the world you might find yourself listening or watching this podcast, mm-hmm. can be done. You're such yeah. a shining example, Kyra. I'm so when obviously I met you in Iraq, but I remember your brother Yosef I'd met him also with his wife. They were on their honeymoon when they came through and stayed with us. Who does that again? Who takes their wife to Iraq on their honeymoon? Well, Yosef did. And I think they went to pardon? A Hebrew word. Yeah. But, yeah. you know, the fondness he had and spoke of you, he says, Tim, you've got to meet my sister. She is just doing so many good things. And and I think that says something, you know, when your brother, who probably, you know, he was pulling your hair out and you're probably like squished in the back of cars, driving around everywhere. I could just imagine.
Brother can do
everything.
Yep.
But when he speaks so.
Yeah. He's
amazing. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, I mean, you know this too, and I don't know if this needs to be in the podcast, but Joseph's just an amazing human.
Hey,
you should talk with him some more too. He used to, in my wild days when I was young and partying, he would drop me off. He would wait for me to come out of the party and take me home. Like, that's the kind of brother he is. And having him by my side, I think, is one of the greater gifts in life.
Man. I'm going to probably get all the neighbors on the podcast. That's for sure.
Yeah, there you go.
Even your sweet mom, like, I remember spending some time with your mom and dad in Belgium, Luxembourg. We were at an event. We were both speaking at an event together in Belgium at a monastery. It was just such a cool experience. And there we were, just, you know, spending a few days together, eating in the cafeteria, talking, just such a beautiful, beautiful soul. I mean, they're all great.
They are.
I definitely will probably have to have them all on the show. Mm-hmm. But, Kyra, like, if anyone wants to come and visit you, if they want to come and reach out and support the red carpet or learn more about what you're doing, please, 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 please let people know, where do they go? How can they get involved? What's the best way to kind of get in touch?
The best way, I think, would be email. But reach out to me. We are upgrading our website, so it's going to be down for a while. I don't know when this podcast is going to exactly come out, but I guess you can link, I always forget the exact, but it's abundantlife.org.il. And you can go there. You can reach out to me personally, Instagram or email. I usually respond on those. But if you're ever in Israel and even just want to pop by and see, it's not for you to serve and actually be active with these women. It really is okay that it's not for everybody. It's not everybody's calling. It's really not. But even if you just want to see and you just even walk around the neighborhood to see, because I think people come to Israel sometimes and they think, you know, the land of the Bible or the land of whatever's happening on the news currently in Israel, there's a whole nother side. And if this does speak to you and you just need to see or be involved or just get a sense of what's happening there, I think it's really, really an amazing place to see. And if it is up your alley to serve and do a homeless woman's feet, a pedicure, or cut out some dreads,
come on,
shower, come on over. We're there. And I promise it's going to be amazing because it always is. It's a unique place. And there's some great women serving on our team. Even if you want to just meet some more strong, amazing women that are serving and sacrificing their life to be there. You know, we work with volunteers. Oh, yeah. A lot of people take time off from their jobs, from their everyday, from their families, and they come and serve. So if you want to come meet some more amazing women serving, just come to us in Tel Aviv. We're always there and we always love having people over.
And I'm sure there's some streets that the guys can wander down and have a chat to some guys on the street and just
We usually have the men sit outside and chat with the men that are walking by because you know you're on this area that obviously is very much brothels and prostitution and drugs, so there isn't really anything else there. So when there's an open door, people are like, "Ooh, what brothel is this?" or "What? What are they selling here?" And then we're like, "Oh, it's just for women." And then usually the guys will sit outside and have really great conversations with men walking around, either buying, selling, or waiting for their girls that are inside. So it's a great place for men as well to come.
What a world! I mean, and what a world that exists, and the beauty that is uncovered when you step into that place. That's what I love about, again, the name Red Carpet. I mean, it's bringing dignity to a place and to people that have been robbed from it, it's been robbed of them. And I can't wait to be back with you in the summer. Yeah. Hopefully you'll be around and we'll get to be there and we'll hang out some. And if you want to learn about how to get involved, you can go to just-travel.co. Maybe sign up for one of our trips. I think we've got another one coming in July. But Israel is one of my favorite places on the planet. I'm sure I'll live there one day with my kids. I'll take a leaf out of your parents' book and just keep moving my family around.
Just move it.
But you've got your brother up in the north in the Golan, and you've got your parents in Jerusalem. So there's so much to see, experience, and do. And I think you're right. It's this land of the Bible. It's this land of modern day kind of what's in the news conflict, but it's also a land of rich culture and it's a land of tech hub cities in Tel Aviv. Like it's such a like in this one small tiny place, there's everything. And when I go there, I just want to experience it all. I'm the kind of guy that when I go to a menu and they say, "What do you want?" I'm like, "Is there like an option to have a little bit of everything?" And it's kind of what you get when you go to Israel.
Yeah.
Well, it's what you should get. A lot of people don't give you that. And but anyways, Kara, thanks so much for your time. You got to get back to your studies. It's your day off. It's Friday. So you're getting ready for Shabbat, right?
I am. I have some good friends actually from FAI coming around.
No way. So good. Some great mutual friends. Well, have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbat later on today. I'm heading off to bed. It's late here, but I tell you what, let's talk again soon. Thank you so much for just carving out some time and being Kara and inspiring and wonderful. And
thank you.
Yeah. See you soon.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Thanks for making it to the end of another episode of Justice Matters with Tim Buxton. It is an immense privilege to share these conversations and inspiring people with you. To learn more about how you can get involved or learn more about today's guest, head on over to the show notes or episode description. This podcast was produced by the master himself, Jose Villotto, with just a little bit of help from me. The featured music is the song Turning Over Tables by The Brilliance. Lastly, to my Patreon community out there, thank you so much for your support and generosity. Without you, this podcast would not be possible. If you'd like to become a Patreon and get exclusive access to behind-the-scenes content, visit patreon.com/justicematters and start your Give What You Can monthly contribution today. And join me and so many others in creating a world where everyone belongs. Until next time, thank you for subscribing and sharing this podcast with your friends. Justice Matters with Tim Buxton acknowledges and pays respect to the past, present, and future traditional custodians and elders of this nation, now known as Australia, and the continuation of cultural, spiritual, and educational practices of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.